You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. An announcement from the post office today. 22,500, roughly, people are going to lose their jobs. Probably, you know, they're trying to do it through attrition. The poison pill, we'll talk about this a little more as we get into the show. In fact, in our third hour, I want to get into it in some depth. The poison pill that the Republicans put into the post office, into Ben Franklin's institution, into the institute, one of the few institutions that's actually in the Constitution, seems to be working. We'll see how that plays out. David Selig is going to be with us in the next hour. In fact, we're going to be talking about the post office then, too. And but Bernie, by the way, has come out with a rant about this. We'll be, I'm sure, hearing from him on that on Friday. And I frankly think that's one of the larger stories of the day. I mean, there is an awful lot going on. Another one is that we were going to hear today or yesterday or tomorrow from the Boy Scouts about whether they're going to end their ban on gay scouts and gay scoutmasters. But this has apparently been postponed, and I'm not sure why. It may be that they're experiencing a new revival of blowback from hysterics or what. I just don't know. But Judd Saul is with us. He is the vice president of Patriots for Christ, which describes itself as a T-evangelical group. NoMoreWimpOuts.com, the website. Judd, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. What's a wimp out?
What's a wimp out?
Yeah, you say you want no more of them.
A wimp out is somebody who compromises their standards and compromises their beliefs to political pressure. They should know better. They should know what they should stand for, and they back down due to a popular culture or a thin majority of the nation.
Okay, so the wimp outs in this case that you're concerned with are the Boy Scouts?
Yeah, for even having them considering the meeting of allowing gays into their organization. We wanted to make a statement saying, we don't want you guys to wimp out, hold true to your principles, and hold true to the principles of the Boy Scouts of America.
You know, I was a Boy Scout, my dad was a Boy Scout leader, and I think probably for the reason that most men become Boy Scout leaders, because they've got kids in Boy Scouts, they want to encourage them to participate. Certainly that was the case in most of the ones that I knew. Others just have, you know, a calling to help out or whatever. But I don't get why. Do you have an affiliation with the Boy Scouts?
No personal affiliation with the Boy Scouts other than being one as a child.
Then why are you so concerned about what, you know, I'm a straight guy, right? And, you know, happily married for 40 years. And I don't sit around thinking about gay men or, you know, things like that all day long. Why do you?
Why do I? Because I have kids, and I'm concerned about the infiltration, the political agenda of the gay movement to take over Christian-based organizations and pollute them.
You know, I'm trying to understand this. I was probably 6 or 7 years old when I figured out that not only were girls different from boys, I mean, I think I'd known that from the get-go, but that there was something interesting about them, and probably around 10 or 12 when I started thinking there's something not just interesting but something kind of cool about them. And I've talked to a number of gay men, and they say, you know, same kind of age thing, that they noticed that they thought there was something kind of cool about guys. In other words, we've always known it, right? It's just, you know, this is the way we were. Are you concerned that your children, first of all, did you grow up with certainty about your sexual identity? And if so, are you concerned that your children aren't?
I did not grow up concerned about my sexual identity whatsoever.
So you're a straight guy and you've always known it, right?
Yeah, straight guy, always known it.
Since you were 7 years old, 8 years old, how old were you when you figured out that you were a straight guy?
I've always known I was a straight guy.
Okay. So I'm guessing you probably had a conversation like this with your kids. Do you think your kids are all straight, or do you have gay kids?
No kid is born gay.
Okay, so you don't know if any of your kids are gay.
No, I don't know if they have a bent towards that sin or not, just like I don't know if they have a bent towards alcoholism or any other sin.
Right, okay. I'm sorry, say that again, Jim. Oh,
I said,
yeah,
I don't know if they have a bent towards that sin
yeah,
or not.
Yeah.
Just like
so you're defining homosexuality as a sin. You're
or drug abuse.
Yeah.
Or adultery. I don't know if they have that bent or not.
What about the mark of Cain? I mean, you know, we used to say that black people had the Mormon Church, actually, up until the 1970s, and it was very frequently used as the rationale among the Boy Scouts for segregating the Boy Scouts, that people who had dark skin somehow were different or sinners. Say what?
I said that's absolutely absurd and ridiculous for you even go there on such falsehoods.
Okay. So let me just understand this. Your premise is that people decide to become gay and they can be recruited into becoming gay, and therefore you're afraid that if gay people are let into the Boy Scouts, whether they be gay kids or gay scoutmasters, that your kids might decide, hey, that sounds like a cool lifestyle. I'll pick that up. Am I saying that well?
Well, you know, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And it's just, you know, we don't want Jerry Sandusky's in the Boy Scouts.
Well, I don't think anybody wants Jerry Sandusky in the Boy Scouts. He was a pedophile. He wasn't, which is a whole different thing from being gay. I mean, this is kind of psychology 101. And anybody who conflates pedophiles, people who are attracted to children, which, by the way, the vast majority of them are attracted to straight, you know, they're attracted to the opposite sex. But anybody who equates pedophiles with being gay is pretty quickly ridiculed by the psychological, you know, industry or whatever, you know, and anybody with any training in that. So, you know, yeah, none of us want pedophiles in frankly, anything. But that's not the issue. We're not talking here about pedophiles. We're talking about gays.
There's lots of evidence, according to the Family Research Council, that says otherwise, that homosexuals have a higher tendency for molestation.
No, it's the Family Research Council's so-called research is nonsense. Let me reassure you, it really is genuinely nonsense. I would strongly encourage you to contact the American Psychological Association, which has, you know, or the American Psychiatric Association, which took, you know, being gay out of the DSM, the APA, both APAs have, you know, for many years now, concluded that being gay is simply a normal, you know, one normal aspect of humanity. How is it that there can be gay mammals in virtually every mammalian species? There's this small percentage, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5% who are gay. Louise and I used to have a pair of gay ducks that lived behind her.
Don't those same mammals lick their own butts and eat their own poop?
Well, I don't think they, you know, maybe for purposes of cleanliness, but what does that have to do with anything?
Well, you're comparing mammal homosexuality to human sexuality.
Are you saying because my cat sits around and cleans itself that it's gay?
Humans run around eating their own poop.
This line of logic seems bizarre. You're saying that because my cat cleans himself, he's gay. Do I have it right?
No, you're putting words in my mouth. I'm just saying that if you're comparing animals, we're talking animals, to humans.
Well, we are animals. Did you not know that?
Yeah, they also eat their own yuck. Not too many humans. I don't know if humans other than totally perverted, typed out humans that eat their own yuck.
I don't know of any mammal species that do that. Some fish do, but... Judd, we're going to have to leave it there. Judd Saul, people can read all about it at nomorewimpouts.com. Thanks for dropping by.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And just to repeat, Judd Saul is the VP of Patriots for Christ, a evangelical group, nomorewimpouts.com. We'll be back. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. Tim in Aberdeen, Washington. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Tim. I hope the same is true for you.
I knew that. Anyway, as far as the guy from you had on from,
No more wimps or whatever, yeah.
There you go. Anyway, there shouldn't, if everybody, by the way, I'm a scoutmaster, been a scoutmaster for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if everybody's following the rules, in, you know, in scouting, we have a thing called youth protection. That's where you have two deep leadership, you're never one-on-one with the boys, you're always in a group. It's, you know, if everybody's following the rules, none of this stuff happens.
Yeah, and these are basic, you know, rules that you find in pretty much any institution where there's adults and kids together, whether it's schools or group homes or even lockdown facilities. And you find similar rules in prisons, particularly where you've got guards of the opposite sex, although increasingly in same sex. I mean, it's just, you know, unfortunately, yeah, there are predators among us, and so we all have to look out for them. But you had some thoughts on the LDS Church in this?
Well, yeah, the scouts communicate by email, and we have large, you know, like Yahoo groups or whatever, so they, mm-hmm, they throw out blast emails. And, you know, yeah, the traffic over the last, you know, week or so has been, you know, a big push by the LDS to flood the, you know, the scouts' mailboxes about how they don't support this. And that's where I think the big pushback came, as they, you know, and it's been, I mean, I've seen, you know, half a dozen emails, you know, with this on it, you know.
So you are a scoutmaster and have been, yep, for 25 years, and yep, your belief is based on what you're seeing in your inbox right now as part of these scouting circles, is that the Mormon, yeah, Church, the Latter-day Saints Church, the Mormons,
right, well,
or individual Mormons, maybe not the institutionalized church itself, are behind, well, much as they took down Prop 8 in California, they're behind trying to stop the Boy Scouts from accepting.
I wouldn't say it's so much the church itself, but it's the leaders that originate out of those churches.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, that's where all these emails are, you know, I mean, because in your area, you get to know all the leaders, and,
right,
you know, you just, and when they throw out an email, you tend to read it and see what's going on,
yeah,
and that's where a lot of that's.
And you're finding that it's the Mormons who are the most hysterical about this.
Exactly.
Amazing.
And then, you know, on the other side, though, on my side, from what I see from, you know, my group, I run a neighborhood troop, so it's not affiliated with, a church, but not, you know, with the Methodist Church, and
right,
it's, the kids really don't care.
Yeah.
It's a non-issue.
I know.
It's the old.
Well, it's the same thing with the military now.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, because it's a paramilitary, you know, organization somewhat.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it seems like the natural tradition, you know, transition.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Joel, thanks a lot for the, or Tim, excuse me, thanks a lot for the call. Joel in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Joel, you're a scoutmaster too?
A former scoutmaster.
Okay.
Been in scouting as an adult for 4 to 6 years,
mm-hmm,
in other capacities also.
Mm-hmm. And your thoughts
on
this issue?
My comment is, based on my experience, I just don't see how a troop or a pack can integrate. I've not formed a personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to set that straight.
Sure.
And I'll say it.
Sure.
But the way a troop operates and a pack operates, and I've had experience in both, a boy that comes in, if he's gay, obviously the other boys are going to know it.
Maybe. I would submit to you, Joel,
may not have the same opportunities. Maybe you talk about bullying.
Right.
Boys sleep in the same tents together. They shower together.
Right.
A Boy Scout order, a troop, is very intimate in its operation.
Sure. Same as the military.
Meaning their program is such that boys do things together.
Right. Same as the military, same as in college.
Also,
yeah, I got it.
They also have to...
But Joel, you've had gays in the Scouts forever. It's just that they haven't been able to say, by the way, I'm gay.
If that's the case, I personally do not know a gay person that's been in scouting. I personally do not know a gay boy that's been in scouting.
I would bet you just about anything that you do, and you just don't know that they're gay because people have been hiding
just,
in the closet all these years.
I know as a scoutmaster for quite a few years that we did not have to be a part of that.
Yeah.
But, My concern is the program itself and the way it's carried out.
Right. So your argument is the same argument that was made back before they allowed gays to be out in the military, that that
I'm not even familiar with that.
Well, that argument was, hey, you know, they're going to shower together. What's going to happen? And what happens is the same thing that's been happening forever. Nothing.
You're talking about boys that are in the formative years, not adults.
Right.
You're talking about boys that do things that as may not even have ever been exposed to what you're talking about. And now adult can be more open-minded and can certainly take things as they come.
I think, Joel, you're imagining outcomes that just aren't going to happen. I mean, just
I'm imagining the outcomes based on my experience.
But your experience is that you just said you've never had an experience of having a gay person in your scout troop.
Well, I know how a troop operates. I know what's involved, and I just think that a gay boy in a traditional troop is really going to be at a serious disadvantage.
Well, what if instead a gay boy in a troop is just like a black young man, a black boy in a boy's troop over the last 30 years is just like a black boy in a troop is an opportunity for the others to learn tolerance.
I've not seen any. We in our cub pack, we have a diversity of Hispanic.
Right, you do now, but you didn't 30 years ago. Joel, we're out of time. I'm sorry. Thank you for calling, and thank you for your concern.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You know, I think if Boy Scouts are going to continue, they're going to have to allow gays. And B, I think this is a great opportunity to basically grow up and join the 21st century. It's talk media for the sane among us, also known as the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. I think that there's an enormous amount of projection going on. And I think we've seen this movie before, only we saw it with black people. The big hysteria, and in fact, you know, the what was used to promote the anti, you know, the original laws against pot, where black men are going to get high and they're going to rape white women. You know, they're all sex fiends. This was, you know, back in the 19-aughts, the 19-teens, and the 1920s, this is what was being promoted. That was the core of reefer madness, was racism. And a racial stereotype that had a sexual piece too. I mean, this is Emmett Till is the logical consequence of three generations of that kind of, you know, bizarre projective thinking. And I would say that it is projection. You know, classic Freudian projection. Sigmund Freud said that people project onto other people their own desires, their own fears, their own us, their own selfness, who they are. People who steal are constantly worried that they're going to be stolen from. You know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you've heard my rant on this before, so I need not repeat it. But so it seems to me that the people who are afraid that gays are sex fiends or something, I don't want to label them all as sex fiends themselves, but it's like, come on, let's get past the stereotype. You know, we've figured out that you know, black people and white people are pretty much the same. It's got nothing to do, not pretty much, I mean, completely the same when it comes to all this basic biological stuff. You know, and gay people and straight people, other than, you know, who they prefer to fall in love with and have sexual relationships with, other than that, they're, you know, we're all people here. And the Scouts are no more a venue for sexual activity than is the military. So it's like, why should this be an issue? Well, at least according to that one caller, it's because there's a whole bunch of Mormons who are getting involved in this, and which actually makes sense to me, given how much the Mormons, you know, how they took down Prop 8 in California. So we'll see where that goes. Mike in Riverton, Utah. Hey, Mike, thanks for listening to Sirius. What's up?
Yeah, Tom, by the way, we're a devout listener to you. We love you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here, because we're right. We have shoes the right everywhere here, and you're a salvation to us. I'd like to share that when you're telling this story, I don't talk about it much because this happened when I was a kid. And I belonged to a Boy Scout troop, and it was Explorers, Boy Scouts, and Cub Scouts. It was a small church. And, we did a lot of things together. The caller said that, you know, we showered together, we camped together, and
sure.
We ate out of the same, you know, we did everything. It was a lot of close contact.
Yeah, I was a Boy Scout. I've been there, done that.
Right. And so everything, but we had a scoutmaster. He was in the military. He was in the Army, and he was a member of the same church. And he would tuck the young kids in at night, and they'd laugh and everything. And he says, I'm going to go tuck them in, and we'd be around the campfire. And then it got awful quiet, and we're talking about 7, 8, you know, whatever the youngest age was. And I was older. I was like 12, 13, 14, something like that. But anyway, eventually this man found a way to get into my house, crawl in bed with me, and I woke up with him touching me inappropriately. It turned out that he was a pedophile, and he, in fact, was attacking all these children. And it screwed us up. I want to tell you, mentally, as far as relationships with women, as far as our own sexual identity, it really screwed us up. And it took years to get over that.
And that's one of the dangers of having pedophiles in any organization like that. But that has nothing to do with gay people. The vast majority of pedophiles are straight. Go ahead.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm a little bit confused between gays and pedophiles myself, and I'm and by the way, I've worked with guys that are gay, and I didn't know it at the time, and I had a real good close friend that died of AIDS, and he was gay, and I never had any problem working with him. But I want to share with you that if in fact, you know, if you know, first of all, to have children go into the scout program is a volunteer situation for the parents and the family.
Right.
As a result of that, I never pushed my kids into going into scouting.
No, I can understand that. Mike, let me make a suggestion and just reality test it with you. Could it be that by having gay scoutmasters and gay scouts, openly gay in the ranks of scouting, they would be more likely to immediately flag and sense the pedophiles, the predators, and warn everybody else and get the, and help purge the pedophiles out of the scouts?
Yeah, if they would do that, that's, I have no problem with
that. That's my sense of what would happen. I mean, I absolutely think that that's what would happen, and I don't want to generalize this to other organizations. It's so easy to go, after, you know, whatever, priests or people in professional football or whatever, you know, those sports, college sports and things. But I really think that having honest, open conversations about these things and having people who are who they say they are and being who they say they are, the people who live in the fringes and the shadows are going to find it a hell of a lot harder to do. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for sharing your story with us. Helen in Seattle. Hey, Helen.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
You are on the air.
Hi. You know, talking about this, denying gays access to the scoutmaster positions or access to scouts. I had a dear friend who was an Eagle Scout when he was 13, and on a camping trip out in the woods in Texas, he was unfortunately gang raped by older scouts.
Yikes.
Who were all straight.
Yeah, so this was not a sexual act. It was a violent act, and as is very often the rape of women by men as well.
Right, and the abuse is already going on.
Yeah.
You know, and the only thing we're doing at this point is denying, you know, yet again, equal rights to, you know, our gay neighbors.
Right, exactly. And that has nothing to do with gay or straight or anything. Although, I think, again, it may actually be of an advantage to the scouts to have gay scouts who would point out, Although now I think increasingly that's really just a form of bullying. It's a form of violence, even though it's, you know, it's sexually, on the surface, it appears to be sexual, that, you know, we're, as a society, becoming less tolerant of this kind of thing. It's sort of a variation. Thanks, Ellen, for the call. Sort of a variation on, you know, George W. Bush when he was in that fraternity, you know, taking the coat hanger and heating it up red hot and burning, you know, branding his the new fraternity member on the butt with it. And, you know, it's like, you know, okay, there's a kind of a weird sexual angle to that, too. It's got nothing to do with gay, and nobody says George W. Bush was or anything else. It's just, you know, it's like this is the stuff that we should not be tolerating, that kind of behavior. Bill in Forked River, New Jersey. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting to me is with a fellow on earlier with you, and he said that, you know, these homosexuals are not born that way, and the approach generally from Christians is to that, but what's amazing to me is that the leader of the Christian church religion disagrees with them.
Right, he said
during
they were
the time during biblical time there was homosexuals were called natural eunuchs, and a natural eunuch was covered under the law of the Roman Ulpian. They were allowed to marry. They were allowed to adopt children. Clement of Alexandria said that the true eunuch is not one who cannot have sex, but one who prefers not.
Right. Eunuch, E-U-N-I-C-H, being people, an artificial eunuch is somebody who's had their testicles removed. A natural eunuch is the old way that they used to refer to gay people. And Jesus made reference to them, did he not?
Three kinds of eunuchs. And there was the eunuch who abstained from sex for religious purposes.
Right.
And Jesus in Matthew 19 said, some people made themselves that way for God. Then there was the castrated eunuch, and he says some eunuchs are made that way by men. But then he got to the homosexuals, and he says some eunuchs are born that way from their mother's womb. Let he who can accept it do so. So yeah. Eunuch, as we know it, is castrated. But in those times, the homosexual was known as the natural eunuch, free of any kind of disease, while as the castrated eunuch was not covered under the law and given any protection under the law, the natural eunuch or the homosexual was. And here we have Christians who are saying, no, this is a matter of choice, but the leader,
Jesus himself,
Matthew 19:12, said no, they're born that way from their mother's womb.
Yeah, and that's an inconvenient verse for these gay-fearing, the gay-obsessed people. Because it does say exactly what you said, and the meaning is as you described it. And B, there is no other reference to gay activity anywhere in the New Testament. And there is two arguably oblique references, largely one to masturbation, the other to a man laying with another man in the Old Testament. But anybody who wants to start quoting the Old Testament as how we should live needs to stop, you know, needs to start boycotting Red Lobster. So, you know, the conversation we've had before. So, and Bill, thank you very much for pointing that out. Excellent point. We'll be back. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Here's an idea. Maybe the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts should just merge. You know, sort of like we've done with the military. I mean, is it time to just say scouting? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, we start out with Judd Saul, who's the Vice President of Patriots for Christ, who is going off on how the Boy Scouts should never allow gays into the Boy Scouts. Oh, my God, it's a terrible thing. And, you know, no doubt we'll come back to this topic, but I would like to kind of radically and quickly change the subject just for a few minutes here. Congressman Tim Ryan is on the line, not the evil Congressman Ryan. This is the good Congressman Ryan.
I appreciate that clarification.
Indeed.
My yard signs in my last election, and not my yard signs, my advertisements in Akron, Ohio said, Tim, not Paul.
There you go. Yeah. Congressman Ryan from representing Ohio's 13th district. In fact, I just mentioned in passing to Louise the other day something about Congressman Ryan, And the person next to me, just their head swiveled, you know. And like, oh, man, I shouldn't have said that. I just had this. Anyway, Congressman Tim Ryan, welcome to our program, first of all.
Great to be with you.
Great to have you on the line. You're one of the good guys. You are a co-chair of the House Manufacturing Caucus. Tell us about this.
Well, when I first got in Congress 11 years ago, I started working on an issue called the Berry Amendment, which says that when, you know, the military buys specialty metals, they should buy American-made specialty metals. And I had a titanium company. But like most things in Washington, there was a waiver process of loophole that you could drive a truck through. So American titanium companies went from, I think, about 10 or 11 a few years back down to about three major ones now. And primarily because of this Berry Amendment, and got into the manufacturing, realized there wasn't a caucus advocating for manufacturing. And knowing, you know, coming from Youngstown and Akron, Northeast Ohio, I know a lot about manufacturing and the benefits of it, and higher wages, better benefits, better retirement, and manufacturing jobs. And I really think we need an update. A lot of people think of manufacturing as old line, dirty manufacturing, but the future is high tech, 3D printing, additive manufacturing, where you need some skills. And I think if we're going to really have prosperity and give everybody opportunity, I think we need to have a national manufacturing strategy. And so the caucus is an opportunity to bring some, bring some light to it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. You know, when Adam Smith in 1776 wrote The Wealth of Nations, he did not say that the wealth of nations was the ability of banksters to borrow money from the government at 1% and loan it out to students at 6%. He said that if a tree branch was laying on the ground, it had no intrinsic value beyond that of nature. But if human labor was applied to it and it was turned into an axe handle, whittled into an axe handle, it became part of the wealth of the nation for several generations.
Right.
In other words, manufacturing is how nations become wealthy. In 1935, if my memory serves me right, Franklin Roosevelt passed the Buy American Act, which stipulated that all federal purchases had to be from American sources unless there were no American sources available. And I believe that it was during the Reagan administration that it just became routine to provide waivers for these things. Even though this law is still on the books, have you looked into any possibility of just, you know, reinforcing that and bringing that back? Or is it going to take new legislation? I mean, what are you guys doing to try to help at the very least? I mean, you know, government spending is 20% of our GDP. It could be a huge influence on American manufacturing.
Yeah, it's I think an opportunity. We did it to a certain extent in the American Recovery Act to try to make sure that the transportation and infrastructure component was, you know, a lot of that would be made in America. Mm-hmm. But as you said, there are always waivers, and one of the problems that you hear down here, there's a revolving door between members, staff, and lobbyists, and so people are always trying to position themselves well for the marketplace after they leave the government work, and so those people tend to the establishment tend to support the status quo. So it's really difficult. But I think there's another approach here too. I mean, obviously the economy is a lot different than it was in 1935. The investments in research and development and the public-private partnerships. When you see the number of patents that are generated from a factory floor, because there's always constant innovation. And I think one of the things we can do, and we even have some companies moving some manufacturing back, is because they want to be next to the intellectual firepower that's helping make the product better. And whether it's with community colleges or research institutions, you want to have everybody next to each other. Why it's so important for us to fund research and development, the National Science Foundation, or in healthcare with the NIH, and make these investments, Department of Energy, so we're coming up with the next best thing, and our institutions are driving this, and I think that helps keep things here in America. And, you know, you look at Facebook, for example. So Goldman Sachs said Facebook was valued at about $50 billion, just about the same as Boeing. But Boeing employs 160,000 people. Facebook employs a couple of thousand people.
Right.
I mean, these are the kind of investments we need to make. And if we keep ahead of the research and development, I think it can help. Not as much as a straight Buy American policy, which would be ideal, but can't help keep things here in America.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. We're talking with Congressman Tim Ryan, the representative from the 13th District of Ohio, and a colleague. You're in the House, he's in the Senate, of a regular friend of our show and guest on this show, Sherrod Brown. You just had this Manufacturing 101 kickoff event. We just have a minute left before the hour's out, sir. Tell us about it.
Yeah, well, we were highlighting next-generation manufacturing. So the administration put together a National Additive Manufacturing Institute. Department of Commerce, Department of Defense, Department of Energy, 40 or 45 million in public money matched by private money. Big dog corporations. The location is in downtown Youngstown, Ohio, and it's going to transform manufacturing. It's all the three-dimensional printing, the additive manufacturing. Instead of cutting out a shoe or a piece of metal or a coffee cup, you print it like you have a printer in your office.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was highlighting this kind of next generation of manufacturing and starting to scrape the surface as to what the policies need to be to continue to push that. And Sherrod Brown's been a huge supporter of all that.
Marvelous stuff. Get over to Tim Ryan, timryan.house.gov, to learn more about Congressman Ryan. This is a guy you want to keep an eye on. He's just doing great stuff. At Rep Ryan is the Twitter account. Congressman Tim Ryan, thanks so much, sir, for being with us today.
Appreciate it, Tom.
Good talking with you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, Ben Franklin thought it would be a good idea if we were able to communicate with each other via the postal service, and so he invented it. He didn't actually invent it. I mean, you know, it had been around Europe for a long time, but he invented the American version of it, first in the city of Philadelphia, long before the American Revolution. One of our first postmaster generals, as I recall, I think Franklin was. If he wasn't, he certainly was the spiritual godfather of it. And the post office has been important, would be, to minimize its significance, part of American history, literally since the founding of this republic. And one of the extraordinary things about the post office is that for roughly 50 cents, you can send, roughly the same amount as you deflate the dollars back over time for, basically a fifth of the cost of a burger or, a third of the cost of a Coke kind of thing, that sort of cost, you can put a piece of paper in an envelope anywhere in the United States, and a couple of days later it'll appear anywhere else, regardless of how remote that destination is. Now, all of that is the good side of the post office. The bad side of the post office, from the Republican point of view, is that the two largest employers in the United States are, number one, Walmart, which is not unionized, and number two, the Postal Service, which is unionized. 500,000 workers. Union workers. And we can't have that, can we? So the Republicans in Congress put together a bill in 2006 when George Bush was president, which he signed into law, which said that the post office has to set aside that. And at that point, the post office, by the way, was running a surplus, so much so that they were talking about putting solar powered vehicles on the road for as much as half of their fleet. Right, making a major investment in solar-powered cars, electric cars. So the Republicans said, no, you have to fund the retirement health benefits 75 years in advance of people who have not yet even been born but might end up employees of the Postal Service, and you have to do that full 75 years of funding over the next 10 years, which was it's called a poison pill. It was guaranteed to really, really damage the Postal Service, thus to help take out that union. And the Senate has tried to fix this twice. They actually passed the legislation. The House of Representatives, controlled by the Republicans, will not have anything to do with it. Back when Nancy Pelosi was running the House did something about it, but then the Republicans in the Senate filibustered it. So we're still stuck. The post office has to pay this $5 billion a year to cover the cost of people who have not yet even been born, to cover their retirement benefits. It seems to me crazy. It doesn't seem crazy to David Selig, though, the pro-business commentator and guest of our program, conservative commentator. His website, TrueTaxHelp.com. David, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Well, thank you for joining us. So why do you hate postal employees?
Well, I got to tell you, I've met quite a few who made me want to go postal.
Oh, my. Come on. Come on. Come on.
What do they say? Neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night.
Yeah, it's actually on the post office a few blocks from here. I mean, the old original etching, and it's true. It's true.
You know, Tom,
these people work their butts off for us, David.
To President Bush, he passed that, you know, Accountability and Enhancement Act of 2006, so they would pay their bills. They were concerned that they wouldn't be able to, you know, pay these poor letter carriers.
75 years from now.
Pensions. And now they can't live within their means. And I'll tell you why, and your listening audience why. Things have changed. The Internet, the way people interact with one another. And they've lost a lot of the commerce, and yet they have picked up a lot of trade from people who do this, you know, what is this, where you buy and sell online?
eBay stuff. One of my brothers is doing that with my dad's estate.
Dinosaurs at the post office are working off this old paradigm. They need some sharp MBA to come in and retool them and make it a profitable.
Well, actually, Bernie Sanders has proposed some very significant changes. Why not, you know, let the post office be involved in a whole variety. There's a bunch of financial transactions that we could be doing at the post office. There's a lot of things. You know, rural post offices are community centers.
Sure.
The last thing that we should be doing is shutting them down and closing them on Saturdays. If anything, we should be expanding their venue.
But
they can't do that as long as they've got to set aside $5 billion a year to fund the health, you know, to help the health benefits of people who retire 75 years from now who have not yet been born.
Oh,
no other institution in government or business has ever been asked to do this, David. It was
a
naked poison pill.
You know, Tom, on most of this issue, you and I may be walking in lockstep, but that one, boy, I strenuously disagree with. They've got to be able to meet their obligations.
75 years from now?
You know, well, no, not 75 years from now. What they need to do is tighten up that vetting process. They hand out those psychological and disability discharges like candy.
They were, David, before this happened in 2005 and 2006, the postal service was showing a profit.
Yeah, it's outrageous, and I think this.
No, it's not outrageous.
Really,
it was very, very healthy. I mean, the thing that everybody thought, the Republicans said was outrageous was that they were talking about doing electric vehicles.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, forget the electric vehicles. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, well, that's what the Republicans said, and so they said, let's take away the post office's money.
Well, we shouldn't do that either, and I'll tell you how we're going to suffer if they close these shops on Saturdays. We're going to lose all that tax revenue. You know, they got like 500,000 employees who go out and they patronize local stores. And they fill up their personal vehicles so they can go to work, and they patronize different organizations, and all that's going away. And like, take the city.
Wait a minute. Am I hearing you speak out against austerity? Because this really is an austerity program, forcing the post office to lay off 25,000 employees. That is, you know, I mean, we've lost 600,000 government employees since the last year of the Bush administration as the result of austerity, most of it at the state level.
Well, this isn't austerity. This is just bad planning. We don't want to close the post office. What we need is really to embrace generally accepted accounting principles and run these things like businesses. And that would be.
But
just
the post office isn't a business. No, David, wait a minute. This is the problem that we had, for example, you know about the Rural Electrification Administration, the REA?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And the reason that Roosevelt had to push that through was because the utilities, the electric utilities, were run as businesses by businesses, and they said, you know, it's really cheap to go from house to house and provide electricity in a city, but it's really expensive
right.
to run a long line out to the country, and so screw the people in the country, we're not going to do it.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Right, well, if you want the post office to run like a business, they'll start making those same kind of decisions. Right now, UPS and FedEx, there's a lot of places, a lot of remote places that they do not deliver to. That last mile, what's called last mile delivery, in some cases the last 300-mile delivery, is done by the post office. FedEx hands it off to the post office.
Right, right.
You run it like a business, though, that's going
to
go away.
To a local postmaster who confirmed exactly what you said, Tom. But if we could revisit that one topic, that they are doing the same things that they were doing 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
They're doing the same things they were doing 200 years ago.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is their business model has changed. The packages from eBay, the mom and pops who are trying to make a go of it in this terrible economy, and they are making a go of it.
Why don't we let the post office offer email and compete with Gmail?
We need them to keep working, and yet we cannot allow them to to run their shop where they're going to need another bailout. Isn't
right.
So?
I'm wondering, why can't I go to the post office and register to vote? Why can't I go to the, you know, to the post office?
Right, and we should. But you want to know something? If there comes a day when we are able to go to the post office to register to vote, we need some way to verify that people are in fact citizens.
Oh, that's a whole other argument. My point is that I guess we're not disagreeing on this, that Bernie Sanders has a whole variety of good options that he's suggesting that the post office could and should be doing. And my question to you is, why are Republicans refusing to allow the post office to do these things?
Well, I don't think they are, but
they are.
In the event
Trust
they
me.
Are getting in the way of good common sense ideas, then I'm opposed to that, Tom.
Okay, well, I'm pleased to hear that.
I'm walking lockstep with these individuals.
Okay, I honor that, David. David Selig, pro-business commentator and conservative commentator, and your website is... All right.
TrueTaxHelp.com.
TrueTaxHelp.com. David, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Auf Wiederhören. I'll hear you later. Talk to you later, David. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what are we going to do about this? Frankly, if you don't call your member of Congress, especially a Republican, and raise hell about the post office, big problem. It's past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, the True People's Media. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind? You wanted to talk about the post office.
Yeah, I did. It's sad to see what's going on here with this Saturday delivery. But one thing I'd like to just add, you know, about your cat Higgins. You had mentioned that he had arthritis, you know.
I think so. He's behaving like it.
What's that, Tom?
Yeah, I think so. He's behaving like it. He can't jump as high as he used to, and he complains a lot, when he bumps into things, and, he's acting like he's in pain.
You're trying to give him some sardines and the olive oil that's in it?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because I take that. I can't really do the acetaminophen, but the anti-inflammatories, because it's hard on my stomach, and I've had like nine knee surgeries over my lifetime.
Yikes.
And it's an option. But anyways, I spent, part of my career, a small portion, was I used to work for FedEx. And they're a really nice corporation. They do a great job and all that, but this is back in the 80s, before we came down to Arizona here. Back then, I believe it was about $8 for an overnight letter to be delivered. Now, if we want to privatize the post office, we're paying, what, 45 cents a stamp or something now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to look like a bargain if it ends up being privatized,
FedEx and UPS are licking their chops.
Yes, we can't have that, yeah. I'm very concerned about that. And also, your last caller, he had something on that stud tax. I'm all for that. We got to get that in and watch this high frequency trading. And also one last tidbit, then I'll let you go here. I saw Murdoch wants to possibly buy the Tribune newspapers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chicago Times and the LA Times. Yeah.
Yeah. He's already got his Chicago Trib in the Wall Street Journal and possibly Barron's.
Yeah.
And it's just saturating the media. You know, it's.
Yeah.
He
wants to do to the United States what he's done to the Australia and the UK and what William Randolph Hearst arguably did to the United States back in the last robber baron era. He wants to be the Hearst of this generation, and I just frankly don't think it's a good idea. Steve, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Malcolm in Park Forest, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Malcolm, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great.
I want to ask you a question, if you know. Isn't the Postmaster General or someone affiliated with the Post Office now a past executive of FedEx?
I don't know, Malcolm. What I do know is that at least one of the postal unions is calling for his immediate resignation, and that Bernie Sanders issued a rather blistering press release, not about him specifically, but just about this decision to close post offices or, stop Saturday first class mail delivery.
Sure, I'm right. I wish you would check it out. If anybody can check it out, you can.
I'll look into it. And Bernie would know, and he's going to be on here Friday, and I'm sure this is going to be at the top of his list.
A former executive of FedEx, and FedEx is terrible. I've had some horrible experiences with them, and there's a FedEx drop box outside my local post office here in Park Forest, and my blood just boils every time I ride by there.
Yeah, and the thing that causes me to make a choice between if I'm going to use a package service and not use the post office. And, you know, more often than not, I use the post office because we use stamps.com here and we can actually print our own postage and all that kind of stuff. So it's like super easy for us.
The best thing that ever happened to any government. It's still the cheapest, most efficient, cost-effective way to mail things. It's good for
absolutely, absolutely. But if I'm not going to use the post office, the thing that I remember is that UPS is unionized and FedEx is not. And
right. UPS, I don't have a problem with. But FedEx, I've had them leave packages out in the hallway when I was in the hospital from a serious operation.
Ouch.
I couldn't even walk at the time, Tom.
Yeah.
And I had some important mail, and I lived in an apartment building there. They left it in the hallway in the main lobby where people come in out of the main door. The mail was stolen. They left it in front of my apartment door. I was in an apartment then. And my mother mailed me some gourmet popcorn from Europe. Somebody swiped that. Okay, and I've had all kinds of horror stories with FedEx.
Yeah.
So tomorrow I'm going to my local postmaster and to the village here to meeting, and I'm going to find out what can we do here to save our post office here.
Well, the main thing is to get the Republicans in the House of Representatives to go along with the Senate in undoing or at least, you know, mitigating the damage of this 2006 law that says that over a 10-year period, the post office has to fund 75 years worth of retirement benefits for people who are not yet even born.
Listen, have they actually
crazy.
Voted to close the Saturday service now, or they're just talking about it? Or what?
The Postmaster General has said that he came out with an announcement today that he is going to end or phase out Saturday delivery of first-class mail. It may be in conflict with law. And so we'll see how this.
I mean, enough is enough.
Yeah, we'll see how this thing plays out. And Friday, as I said, you know, Bernie will give us the whole scoop on this. But thanks a lot, Malcolm. It's always great to hear from you. And thanks for listening to WCPT. Linda in Harmony, North Carolina. Hey, Linda.
Hi, Tom.
You live in a rural area?
Yes, I am. And the post office hours are already cut back to barely half a day on Saturday, and they're closed for 2 to 3 hours every day in the middle of the day.
Oh, my.
So that the one running the counter can actually go deliver mail or sort. They've cut down, and it's been 3 or 4 years now that it's just been almost impossible to really run a home internet business using the post office. But I can't afford to have them, FedEx or UPS, come pick up a package. And if I go to the town that's 20 miles away, UPS isn't even open during the day. They're not open until after office hours.
Yeah, and this is the thing. The post office has been the great equalizer for small businesses, particularly rural small businesses, nationwide.
One issue is also they're still delivering these flyers from local grocery stores and businesses. Mm-hmm. They should double or triple that rate because that's a lot of work for workers.
Yeah, the third-class delivery rate. I don't know if they should increase it or not. I don't know the math of that. I know that they've got people who sit around and go, okay, if we increase it by, you know, 5%, do we lose 5% of our business, or do we only lose 4%, or do we lose 6%? And they're paying very, very careful attention to that. So, but, Linda, thank you for your call. I'm with you. We need to keep these post offices open. 27 minutes past the hour. And let's make it very clear. Let me just make this very, absolutely, totally, unmistakably, irrefutably clear. This whole postal thing was absolutely unnecessary, and it's being done by the Republican Party to try to destroy the largest unionized employer in America.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
This is John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, and the other Republicans continuing Reagan's war on labor. It's Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman radio program, radio and TV program. Just don't tell Rush Limbaugh, he'll want some and he'll have a problem. 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Does not lead to stiff thinking. I don't know. Maybe we should stop using that slogan. I don't know. It's loaded. we've got the post office, we've got the Boy Scouts, we've got yesterday, you know, we talked at some length yesterday about drones. There's two drone issues. There is, and this is a really hot debate within the Democratic, and I'm with the big D, Democratic Party circles, is support the president or support the Constitution. Frankly, that's how I see it. And, you know, I would like to have it both ways, but I don't think I can. I think that without a declaration of war, you know, if we have declared war on Pakistan, then send in the drones. You know, it's just a modern version of, you know, what used to be an F-15 or something. But if we haven't declared war, then I think that the mission of a drone should be limited to the mission of the old U-2 spy planes, which is just to be an eye in the sky, rather than dropping bombs. You know, back when Ellen's partner, Sholene Espinosa, was a U-2 spy pilot, one of the very first, you know, women spy pilots, they, you know, they were just looking. So, and then of course there's the issue of drones over the skies in the United States. And there we really need to have a conversation about the Fourth Amendment and where this is going. So a lot of stuff going on. And of course we opened up the program with the Boy Scouts, apparently under, enormous pressure from, some very aggressive members of the Mormon Church, postponing any decision on whether to lift the ban on gay scout members and scout leaders. Let me just send a quick SOS message or whatever the phrase is for an urgent message to the Boy Scouts. Hey, guys, you have had gay scouts and you have had gay scoutmasters for as long as you've had scouts. End of discussion. And they've been no more disruptive than anybody else and just as much of a contribution. I mean, this is the old black-white argument all over again. This is a civil rights issue. Judy in Prescott Valley, Arizona. Hey, Judy, what's up?
Well, hi. No, I was listening to your. I love your program, by the
Thank
way.
You.
I was listening on the Scouts,
mm-hmm.
and there's a recent article of a almost Eagle Scout denied award because he was gay.
Oh no!
And it was on NBC News
uh-huh.
on Friday, and Miranda Litzinger, staff writer, wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being denied it, and he's like top person.
Right.
The boy's name is Ryan, R-Y-A-N, Anderson, A-N-D-R-E-S-E-N.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of E-R, it's R-E.
Right.
And the article, it has where we could sign an online petition.
Mm-hmm. In support of him.
In support of him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is just absurd to say. Okay, here's this kid. He has been a scout. You work your way all the way up to Eagle Scout. I mean, that's I got
to
confess. I was a scout for 8 months at the most. I mean, it's like you know, I dropped out. I was not an enthusiastic scout, and my dad was a scout leader for like 2 years because he kept trying to get me to get back into it and get my brother into it. And you know, he thought it would be a good thing for us. And you know, my dad, God bless him, he did so many things for his sons. I look back on and. But in any case,
we didn't go along with it, did we?
Yeah, and you don't.
I got too.
Yeah, and you don't learn until your parents yourself. You know what your parents went through. But in any case, I think you know I do know how much work it takes to become an Eagle Scout. I was not willing to do that kind of work, and a kid being denied the right to have that, you know, his merit badges or his honor or his, you know, being lifted to that status because he has come out as being gay, to me, is an obscenity, just an obscenity. You know, it is such a poor reflection on that institution of scouting. Judy, thank you for the call. Thanks for the information. Abby in Whitehall, Pennsylvania. Hey, Abby, what's up? You want to talk about the poison pill in the post office?
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Yes. No, I'm a Democrat working in a very outnumbered status. I work with very right-wing people who just say the most insane things on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And today, it's just hilarious. We heard about the post office being closed on Saturdays come August. And their comments then were, well, we shouldn't get rid of that. We should just get rid of the pensions. And I'm thinking to myself, going, you guys are the ones who voted in the president who did the pensions and did all this to make them do this.
Yeah.
And that, and it's just insane. Like, they sit here and they talk. I'm sorry, I have a baby in the back seat now.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like they're advocating this race to the bottom. Let's get rid of the postal employees' pensions, you know, because, hey, who has a right to a pension? And shouldn't we all be saying, how about everybody having a pension? Let's give the McDonald's workers a pension and a raise, by the way.
Oh, yeah, they're totally against pensions. It's ridiculous. And I have to listen to this nonstop all day long. And I don't, I will say that I will not step up and say anything because I am very outnumbered and
the
people I work with, I know if I say something, it's just going to throw oil on that fire and it's just going to get worse.
Well, you might be surprised, Abby, if you know, a lot depends on style, you know, sometimes saying, well, you know, I'm probably wrong, but, you know, here's what I think, or, you know, have you considered this? I mean, there may be ways, not that I'm trying to turn you into a rabble rouser here. but Abby, thank you for the call and thanks for sharing your story with us. And, you know, my very best to you and your kid in the back seat. Appreciate it. Doug in St. Peter's, Missouri. Hey, Doug, you're up.
Tom, love your program. Love you. You are dead on everything you say.
You are a postal employee?
I'm 29 years. I've been a mail handler, a carrier, and a supervisor in my career.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, what they did was when they redid the post office on the last negotiations, they subsidized the mailers, and I'm not saying this is wrong, so that they subsidized it using first-class mail.
Right.
Now, the first-class mail volume dropped, and if you lose the post office, these mailers are not going to be able to send out their magazines using FedEx or UPS.
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
Right. There's no equivalent to third-class mail in the for-profit world.
There's no way. And that's the thing that's kept them at bay for so long, because they won't deliver to Anchorage, Alaska. One time we had a guy out there who was building his house, and we had to actually get a helicopter because he was ordering bricks through the mail.
Huh.
And, honest to God, it actually happened, because he could get it cheaper from the post office. That was the cheapest way to get the bricks for his house out there.
Sure.
But it goes even beyond that, because we've been under assault for years, and the only thing that really scares them, and from what I understand right now, is that when this was brought up to the Congress and they were talking about, you know, trying to break us, is that if we have the same health plan, we're on the same health plan as the members of Congress. If they take the post office and they break the post office, they're going to lose their health care as well. They're going to lose their franking privileges.
I don't think so.
Return to sender.
I don't think so. I think that, well, actually, who knows? Actually, interesting point. Continue. I interrupted you.
Okay.
You were going through a list.
Okay. Here's the other part of it. Is it used to be that we had managers that were brought up from the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew everybody in the plant. They, over the last 5 years, under Potter, what they did was they started moving all these managers around.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember when the Russians came into Poland and they installed their own generals and officers in the Polish army, everybody said, well, why can't you speak Polish? You speak lousy Polish. It was because they were Russian. They're moving these people around because they don't want them to have any connection to the people of that city or the employees of the post office. So they have gone through and gutted our workforce.
Wow.
When the UPS strike hit a couple years ago, we took over all of the UPS mailing. We don't stand a chance of doing that now because they have us cut so thin. Now, everybody on the management side are still there. We still have 14 people walking around checking the same piece of mail. But as far as the workers that actually move the mail, the carriers are a very hard job. You do a 10-mile walking route on hills in the middle of summer when it's 95 degrees out, I drank 2 gallons of water and never had to use the bathroom. I'll put it that way.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you sweat it all out.
Job. I've seen people go in there when I was carrying and literally drop off the keys. They'd load up their truck. They'd get everything cased, load up their truck, and they'd be so disgusted with the job, they'd just leave the keys in there and walk off the job and never return. So these people who think that we have some kind of easy job and it's just all...
Well, I remember when Louise and I lived in Vermont, our postal carrier had 1 year he had one knee replaced, and the next year he had the second knee replaced because he had been walking about a 10-mile route every day for 25 years. And, you know, carrying this big bag, you know, this big heavy bag. And it's tough work. And I think it is a crime the way the Republicans just cynically looked at the Postal Service and said, this is the largest unionized employer in America. And the private union force now is down to around 7% unionized. But government workers are about 30%, over 30% unionized. So we got to kill off some government workers. And they have, so far, they've laid off almost 700,000 government workers just since Obama came into office. This is mostly in the red states. These are mostly state employees. And now they want to go after the 500,000 or 600,000 unionized employees at the post office. And it's just wrong. Doug, thanks for the call and thanks for sharing your story with us. Appreciate it. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We will return.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And you can drop in and hang out with some of the finest minds in the world in our free live chat room at TomHartman.com. Plus, we have a new free app. And welcome back. Let's check in on the news with the Talk Radio News Service brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com, where you can give a goat to help a rescued slave and receive a photo of your goat and the person that you helped at GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. And Ellen,
you can also
Ratner.
Go to shop and get one of these nice hearts for Valentine's Day, made by women who have seen somebody killed in front of them.
They're absolutely beautiful. Yeah. I have one about the hearts that's right now covered up. I've got to move my things around here.
It's Valentine's Day. Okay. Yeah. It's not Valentine's Day for Defense Department contractors. They're not very happy because of this sequester. There's actually a meeting at the White House today with several defense contractors voicing their unhappiness with this sequester. And Pratt & Whitney president and Aurora Flight Sciences, as well as Northrop Grumman, who actually makes several of the drone models. They all showed up at the White House. It's an interesting, you were talking about the military-industrial complex. Well, of course, the unions are very concerned about this, too. It is jobs. It is true.
Sure.
But it's also drones.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Are the defense contractors upset because they're going to have to basically repitch their pitch?
They're going to have to either be more efficient, or there's going to have to be military personnel that are going to lose jobs. I mean, the fact is that there is probably going to be some job loss. Now, what's interesting is that they are now saying, the Republicans, of all strange people, are saying, okay, let's not do sequestration. They voted for it. Mm-hmm. Let's not do sequestration. Let's do this through workforce reductions over a period of time, and that there will be attrition. The problem is that with costs as they are, and with the stock market at one point having gone down and people have lost a lot in their house, et cetera, you don't have the older generation, the boomers, retiring so fast from government service. So the attrition is not as high as I think the Republicans would like to lead us into thinking it is.
Okay.
So that's the problem with the Republican, well, let's just do it through attrition. We're not going to really make any cuts. I thought these were the guys during the Romney-Obama election, that were saying they're not making tough cuts.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then they're not making cuts.
Yeah, nobody ever accused the Republican Party of being absolutely consistent and not being hypocrites. So
okay, so as you know, the post office came out with some tough cuts today on Saturday delivery.
We've been talking about it here.
Well, today Speaker Boehner now said that they are going to act soon on postal reform. Wait a minute. Again,
really?
How long has this been going on? You and I could turn gray and old.
Yeah. This all started in 2006 when they decided to take out the largest unionized employer in the country, which was the post office. The Republicans did this.
Right. And so here we go. And now they're saying, well, it's going to be enacted soon, says Speaker Boehner. Hello? I mean, what's been going on for years?
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Do you think that there would be actual postal reform, or is this going to be another Republican effort to gut the... You know, if you just do away with your union, we'll give you back some money. Or say, you know, do away with your pensions. Or
yes. I mean, if I'm a guessing person, they're going to go to the heart of the working person, and they're going to take off small post offices in rural areas, which frankly doesn't add up to that much.
Right.
But they're going to go after people that
who are least able to defend themselves.
That's right, and least
that's
able to have a voice.
That's the Republican strategy. Okay.
Right. Okay. By the way, there is now a plan, or there is a vote in the House, meaningless, 253 to 167, to require a balanced budget date from the president at the date that he would actually wind up balancing the budget. And so this went on today. They're actually, it was 26 Democrats did vote with the Republicans.
In the House?
In the House, yes. Okay. But a lot of these people are considered what we say vulnerable. Or they're going for a Senate bid. In other words, they're looking for another office.
No, and I understand.
Politics.
Yeah.
Okay. There is also, interestingly enough, the Boy Scouts are now taking a vote today. We've talked. They said that they may be postponing.
We opened the show with this.
Yes. Okay, you did. So this is the National Executive Board is meeting in Irving, Texas, and they are going to now, but the vote's going to now come in May. They were going to vote today. It's now going to come in May, and it's going to take place among all 1,400 members of the National Council. That's not a good thing, I think, because
I got a call from a fellow who's been a scout leader for 29 years, he said, and he said he's on all the Yahoo groups and whatnot, you know, where the scout leaders all talk to each other kind of in the background. And he said that they're getting really intense pressure from members of the Mormon Church. Who are also
well, you know, the Mormons have always supported the Boy Scouts in a very big way.
But they don't support gays.
No, they don't. Although it's interesting, Caitlin Ryan from the Family Acceptance Project has actually been working with some people in the High Mormon Church because, of course, there are so many gay people in the Mormon Church.
Right. So you think that there's a possibility that the LDS Church might start backing away from this the same way they did in, was it, 78 or 87 when they decided that black people weren't carrying the mark of Cain?
Well, I give them 5 to 10 years, and I think they're going to come around.
Yeah.
But it's going to take that long.
Yeah. It's interesting. Okay. What else?
Okay. A couple other fast ones here. The Citigroup Security... the sale of Citigroup Security, apparent securities...
This is a division of Citigroup, the bank.
That's right. And they actually are actually returning more money to the Troubled Asset Relief Program. And they are now saying that because of the bailout, they're giving taxpayers a 30% return on money. And that's really amazing. And that's for everybody who said, you know, well, we shouldn't help anybody out. Let these companies go, et cetera. Also, it looks like there are greenhouse emissions data that just came out from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and at least 2.221 million metric tons of carbon dioxide went into the skies in 2011, 10 times greater than the petroleum, et cetera, emissions. So, from petroleum and natural gas. These are from power plants,
from
not
coal
good news.
Mostly.
That's right,
yeah.
From coal.
Yeah.
That's exactly. And you know, it's Dennis Kucinich talked about that before he left office.
Yeah.
It was.
Ain't no such thing as clean coal.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Check it out, goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can buy a pendant, a heart-shaped, beautiful crystal heart-shaped pendant. Show it to Ellen.
For Valentine's Day.
There you go. Made by women in South Sudan who have seen friends and colleagues murdered in front of them. This is a PTSD group. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, in the beginning, there were libraries. No, seriously. I mean, we've been keeping track of things in libraries for a long, long time. You go back to the Library of Alexandria. You go back to the old Roman libraries. You can go back to the old Greek libraries 1,000 years before that. Libraries have long been considered part of the commons. The common wisdom, common knowledge. Something, there have been times in history when libraries have been only available to the select few, the monastic libraries. In fact, there have been times in history when much of what we now know of, you know, the great and ancient wisdom of, you know, philosophers and scientists, from millennia ago, centuries ago and millennia ago, was just the result of monks copying things down over and over and over again and keeping track of this. But then the idea, you know, really got popularized with Ben Franklin, who helped not only start the first post office in Philadelphia, but also the first public library and, you know, one of the projects of his Juno Society. And so should, you know, people don't so much show up in libraries anymore. They don't so much, you know, it's the library business is getting harder and harder because people are getting more and more of their information off the web. So shouldn't free public Wi-Fi be the equivalent of the free public library? Seems to me like it should. Steve Titch is with us. He is the telecom policy analyst for the Reason Foundation, reason.org, the website. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. I hope the same is true of you.
Yeah,
why would free public Wi-Fi not be the modern day equivalent of a free public library?
Well, it's kind of they're two different things. So Wi-Fi is a service.
So is a library.
It's a broadband connection. A library is really, it's a database. It's a place where information is stored and kept and accessible.
But I can go into the library and I can access the Wi-Fi for free.
Well, that's...
the internet, rather.
The Wi-Fi is giving you internet access. In a way, it's giving you access to greater information. But the point is that somebody still has to go out and build the Wi-Fi network. At some point, you have to, there has to be a cost that's in.
Well, somebody had to build our libraries. We collectively said we think that having public libraries is going to make us smarter. It's going to, you know, it's going to be part of our intellectual commons. It's going to be an important part of our intellectual commons, both for our young people and for people throughout their lives, and therefore we're going to make libraries free. We're going to pay for them collectively out of our tax dollars, and I know, you know, libertarians like yourself think that taxes are things that are taken by people with guns and you know, wrong, especially if you're a billionaire. You know, no, don't tax me, but hey, you know, there is this thing called the commons. It is part of the American tradition. Is this not, how could this not be the modern day version of Ben Franklin's idea that every person, regardless of their station in life, regardless of how rich they are, regardless of whether or not they have access to money from the Koch brothers, that they should still have access to the wisdom of the ages?
Okay. Well, let's look at it this way. It's still costly to build a broadband network.
Right.
You have to find a way to cover that cost.
Right.
It's a cost that's it isn't just a one-time sunk cost into a structure and maybe you budget how many books you're going to buy like you will a library. You have to.
Well, libraries have ongoing costs and they have ongoing personnel costs.
But they're predictable. You're dealing with a lot of variables with a network. There are about six or seven, before I came on, I've got about six or seven Wi-Fi devices in my home today. If I were to use, some of them are broadband, like my, certainly my PCs and certainly my DVD player. Those all create management issues. Who is going to operate these Wi-Fi networks? Are you going to have a government department building, operating, and managing it? Are you going to outsource it?
Well, here's my metaphor for this, Steve.
From a current service provider, or are you going to overbuild? You're going to start running up costs. You're going to start running up.
Well, may I respond?
Yes.
Okay. I would say that the commons part of it, if we look at free public Wi-Fi like libraries, it's a basic minimum service. I mean, you know, a library, if I want, you know, a large selection of, you know, a wide variety of books, yes, I'll go to the library. If I want to get the latest and greatest coffee table book as a gift for one of my kids, I'm going to go to a bookstore. I mean, it's they can coexist just fine, and in fact, they do. I mean, you know, Amazon and Barnes & Noble are doing just fine, thank you very much. And you know, at the same time, there's an enormous amount of stuff that's available in free public libraries. So it seems to me that if somebody wanted to do commerce over a public Wi-Fi, they, you know, it probably wouldn't be the level of service that they need. If somebody wanted, on the other hand, to simply have access to the internet to be able to you know, to read the classics or just read Wikipedia,
that's a good observation, but that's not but where do you, that's a question you have to set up when you're setting up public broadband. Do you have parameters? Are you going to limit bandwidth or program it so really the best access you're getting are things like Wikipedia or a newspaper or photographs? Is it going to be something that replaces current commercial broadband, where you can download videos, you can watch streaming video? Now, are you thinking of a baseline public service that...
Yeah, the same as I think that...
...you a minimum bit of bandwidth that really is something different than what you're getting from internet service providers, from commercial internet service providers.
Right, just like if I go into a library. I mean, you know, there's a very good chance the book I want, you know, they only have two copies of it, and if it's a popular book, I'm going to have to get on a waiting list and wait a month for it.
You can get free wireless at your library. You get free wireless at a lot of at Starbucks, at McDonald's. I was reading in the Times that kids will go down to McDonald's, and don't even press them to buy stuff. They'll do their homework there if they have to. If you're a traveler, you're finding this service in more and more places.
Right, but I'm talking about making it available to everybody, just like a public library is, not just to somebody who can afford to go into McDonald's. And, yes, you know, they will not kick you out if you don't buy anything, or at least so far, or Starbucks. But, you know, the pressure is pretty clear. If you don't have, you know, if you don't have a latte in front of you that you're slowly sipping, they start giving you the dirty eye. And
well, Tom, it's the thing you've been talking about has been tried on a number of.
We've been doing it since 1740. It's called the public library system.
Well, there's been some municipal wireless projects over the past 10 years. They don't. Well, and they tried to do exactly that. Cover areas.
No, I lived in Portland when they tried to do one that didn't succeed. But now that we're talking about, let's use higher frequency bandwidths, where you've got, you know, radio waves basically that can move through concrete, that can move through, you know, because the big problem with the Portland experiment was, you know, in half the city you couldn't get it.
Yes.
So, you know, let's use these gigahertz bandwidth, you know, frequencies rather than the 822 megahertz bandwidth. But Steve, we've run out of time. I think that I get it. I'm guessing you'd prefer to just see this all privatized. Is that a good summary?
I think that will achieve the goal of what you want faster.
Okay. All right. That's our philosophical difference. We'll leave it at that. Reason.org, Steve Titch. Thank you, Steve.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Steve, of course, telecom policy analyst with the Reason Foundation. You can check it out. We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour. Should we have free public Wi-Fi nationwide? 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Occupying the Media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. And free Wi-Fi for all Americans. Could it be that, like, you know, during the Bush administration, they were saying to the people working in the post office, you will keep track of what books people are checking out. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon, this is your concern.
Yes, Tom. I believe that the government doesn't give you anything for free. If they're giving away free Wi-Fi, it's because they want to monitor the people that are too poor to have their own Internet connection.
But AT&T doesn't give you anything for free either, Ed. And in fact, it was AT&T that was...
I'm sure that the government is sponsoring this move.
I don't think so. And if they are, fine. Because, it was AT&T, by the way, that got busted for the big spying on people on the web. but
yes,
you know,
sure, in San Francisco, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
They never got busted for their big spying operation down in Florida, where all the long lines come together from around the world. All the internet long lines come to Florida, and you can be sure that the NSA has a big operation down there.
Yeah, my core principle on this, Ed, I am as concerned. Paranoid is too strong a word, but I'm as concerned as you are about our government becoming excessively intrusive. 9/11, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and their bunch used 9/11 as excuse to turn America so rapidly into a 1984 kind of society. You know, wrongly, it was a terrible thing. It was a crime against America. I'm with you on that. That said, AT&T, MCI, if they're still around, Sprint, Verizon, whatever, you know, you name it, one of these giant oligopolies, these monopolies. Not only do they have no soul, I mean, they're corporations, but they have no accountability to anybody other than their stockholders. At least if the government is doing something, if enough of us get upset about it, if we learn about it, we can vote the bums out, we can put some political pressure on them. You try to picket AT&T, they will have you arrested for trespassing on private property. You try to, you know, you show up at your congressman's or woman's, you know, local town hall meeting, you will be able to have your say, or at least part of your say, and you certainly can contact their offices as often as you want. They're not going to get a restraining order against you. In every case, I'm with Thomas Jefferson. I would rather have a government of, by, and for the people, and I'd rather have, if there is the commons, if there is something that we all do essentially need, and I think increasingly the internet is something that we need, then it should be, at least some piece of it should be provided at some minimal level by we the people. And we the people, all we got left at is our government. That's us.
Tom, the government is using every opportunity to spy on us. The AT&T that got busted out in San Francisco, they got busted because the NSA set up a room in the AT&T long line division.
I know.
Well,
and they got outed.
Room in the AT&T long lines division in San Francisco. They have one
Ed, had the NSA not been involved in that, there never could have been a Freedom of Information Act request. There never could have been government whistleblowers. We never would have known about it. The very fact that government was at the middle of that is what made it possible for us to know about it, because we still have this concept that the government is us. And that's what concerns me about saying, oh, we're going to get the government out of this altogether, which is what the, you know, obviously the Reason Foundation and all the billionaires want. You get the government out of it altogether, and then things like the Freedom of Information Act go away. You don't have a Freedom of Information Act against AT&T. You do against the NSA. I mean, yeah, obviously there's some limits, but you do. And so, you know, respectfully.
We know about it.
Say what?
We know about it, but the government is still building that huge data collection center in Utah.
I understand that, and it doesn't stop them. And well, I think it slowed them down considerably. I think it caused them to be a lot more careful about what they're doing. And I think that as time goes on, we are either going to see more limitations on government activity and greater civil liberties, or less. And if we see less, if it's being done by the big corporations, there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. And if it's being done by the government, at least we can make a stink about it in public, and we can vote in people who will do something about it, hopefully. That's our last hope, is we the people. And it's not we the corporations. And that's what the choice has come down to. It's a very binary choice. Ed, thank you very much for the call. I respect your opinion, as you know. I absolutely respect your opinion. And I think, well, I've said my piece. Jim in Eagle, Colorado. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Great. You wanted to get back to the post office here.
Back to the post office and everything, and about FedEx.
Mm-hmm.
FedEx, when it was founded in 1973, it was under the Railway Act, which keeps us out of the Teamsters. I mean, did you know that? Maybe you're totally aware of that.
I did not know that, no. I remember hearing that there was some, that FedEx was some, you know, had, at some point had defined themselves as part of some national infrastructure that allowed them to exempt themselves from unionization, but I never knew the rationalization.
Yeah, and then when Obama came in, the first Congress, Teamsters pushed their lobbyists to get Congress to change the law, and it passed the House. And it went to the Senate, but then it died.
Right.
And now I go back to the House, but the Republicans control the House now.
Right.
And so the only union that we can join is the one that united an American. We have to all be one union. We cannot be.
By we, you're talking about, are you a FedEx employee? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah. FedEx Express. Yeah. Because today, Federal Express is one building in Memphis, and they own FedEx Express, FedEx Ground, FedEx Kinko's, FedEx Freight, et cetera.
Right.
And it's just, it's all different.
And they've got this weird deal that they were able to buy enough legislators to get so that they've become basically welfare queens with regard to unions. They have a government protection from unionization.
Well, we could still, we've never voted on, but we could be in the one, like I said, that united in Americans, and it would have to be the same one. But to be in the Teamsters, there'd have to be, the law would have to be switched, which would take us out of the Railway Act to put us in with the Teamsters. Now, the Teamsters, I believe UPS is like 75%. The Teamsters is like 75% of the UPS.
It's a large chunk of it, yeah. I don't know the details. I just know that UPS is largely unionized and FedEx is not. Jim, thanks for the information. I'm going to have to do a little digging on this, but I appreciate the call, and thanks for the heads up. I'm telling you, we've got the smartest listeners on earth. I learn as much as I eat. You think I'm teaching you? I learn so much from my own show. Thank you, Ed. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And drop by TomHartman.com. You can create your own blog. You can participate in our message boards. It's all free. Lots of cool stuff there. That would be the good, the bad, and the very, very omnigentlessly ugly, the good. Christine Lagarde. At the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, the chief of the International Monetary Fund told a crowd that climate change is, quote, the greatest economic challenge of the 21st century. She went on to say that, quote, good ecology is good economics. This is one reason why getting carbon pricing right and removing fossil fuel subsidies are so important, end quote. Former conservative finance minister of France closed her speech by saying that, quote, unless we take action on climate change, future generations will be roasted, toasted, fried, and grilled. Ms. Lagarde is right. Absolutely right. It's time to act now to save our environment, our planet, and perhaps from our point of view, most importantly, the human race. The bad. Fox so-called news. This morning, the Talking Heads on GOP TV took a shot at Hillary Clinton. In a sexist remark, Talking Head Steve Doocy suggested that, after seeing a picture of a revitalized Hillary on the web, that she must have had a facelift in the last couple of weeks. Doocy was surprised to see that Clinton appeared to have a glamorous new face. Doocy's sexist remarks are just the latest against Clinton. After the Benghazi hearing, the Rupert Murdoch-owned New York Post ran a sexist front-page cover featuring a picture of Clinton at the hearing with the tagline, "No wonder Bill's afraid." So it looks like the Republican Party and their unofficial mouthpiece still haven't learned how to win over the female vote. And the very, very ugly Tony Perkins. Perkins, head of the conservative Anti-Gay Family Research Council, was on CNN this morning talking about the Boy Scouts' ban on homosexual scouts and troop leaders. And in order to make the case that the Boy Scouts should keep the current ban in place, Perkins resorted to the extremely ignorant and hateful but all too common argument that being gay is somehow associated with pedophilia. Perkins told Soledad O'Brien that, quote, they, the Boy Scouts, are trying to create an environment that is protective of children. This doesn't make it more protective. There is a disproportionate number of male-on-boy when we get on pedophilia. Male-on-boy is a higher incident of that, end quote. The argument that being gay leads to pedophilia is about as ignorant as you can get and very, very ugly. Amazingly ugly. Incredibly amazingly ugly. Vic in Syracuse, New York, the founder of the Boy Scouts was gay?
That's what all information suggests.
Tell me about this.
Well, you know, I'm not sure where to start. You know, my own background
is I was an Eagle Scout, a counselor at a Boy Scout camp, the Boy Scouts troop leader of the Fort Carson, Colorado troop when I was a draftee in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that I had read suggested, no, it more than suggested, it out and out stated that he was homosexual.
Interesting. I'm going to have to do a little research on that. That's an interesting one. I haven't heard. Thanks for the call. Michael in Brookline, Massachusetts. Hey, Michael, you want to talk about free Wi-Fi?
Yeah. The first point is I agree with you absolutely 100% about what you said, but you're marketing this.
About what I said about what?
Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay.
About the comments and this and that and the next thing.
Yeah, it's the new library.
Absolutely spot on, okay? So we can dispense with that and go on.
Mm-hmm.
You're marketing it in the wrong way.
Okay.
The way you market this is you say that the world has Wi-Fi all over the place, and we need it to remain competitive, and this is a military threat. This is how we got our road system, and this is how we got the Internet. I was there. When the Internet was founded,
it was DARPANET.
I was working. The ARPANET, yes. Yeah. I was at working at Project Mac when Bob Bressler built the first IMP, first message processor for the DARPANET, and also meanwhile quietly he never said what he was doing. Bob Metcalf wrote the specs for Ethernet at this place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Defense Department, if they haven't changed, basically a very large percentage of the central part of the Internet is DOD related.
Sure.
Either they may have been turned it over, but it was built by the Defense Department.
Right, and public universities, by the way. State universities, yes, had a large role to play in that as well.
Okay, good. Okay, so you that's one of the reasons that I listen to you. You know a lot of history, some that I don't know. But the Defense Department was very major in this. If you say that, and this is a conundrum in this country, it's a real problem. The Defense Department is incredibly wasteful, but if you look at the major technology that resulted in the 20th century, it's because the Defense Department was given a lot of money and they weren't scrutinized. One of the things they did was they built the Internet in this country.
Mm.
Now, what I would suggest you say is that there's a national security risk because the Chinese and the Germans and everybody else is going to get ahead of us. So what we need
They already
do,
have.
I know, okay? They already have, okay? And what we need to do to protect ourselves is to get a world-class Internet, and we now will get the Defense Department, who has bloated excess money that they're wasting to build the Internet because they have the expertise.
That's a great suggestion, Michael. And I would add, you know, if you think that you're going to get a world-class Internet out of you know, AT&T or Verizon or whatever, who's trying to squeeze an extra $20 out of you, oh, you want more than 200 text messages? I mean, you know, they're always
so
looking for
stupid.
Some...
The, yeah. I mean, the thing is that... The interesting thing about these so-called libertarians that you have on, aside from being greedy and being shills for the corporations, is when you say military, all scrutiny drops, okay? So
right.
if you said, oh my God, you're unpatriotic, it's a military threat not to have wireless for everybody in the United States.
Yeah. So when I'm arguing with a Republican, I should be talking about... You know, I should be talking about this the way Eisenhower talked about our national highway system. When I'm arguing with a Democrat or if I'm discussing it with a Democrat, I should be talking about it being part of the commons like the libraries.
Yeah.
That's your marketing argument.
I agree.
I think you're right on, Michael, and your concept of framing the same message in different ways for different audiences is absolutely solid. And if I was to go on Fox News, although I think probably both arguments, I think a lot, but whatever. Excellent point. Thank you for the call, and thank you for sharing that with us. Jim in Blackwood, New Jersey. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. By the way, the call from Syracuse is right. Lord Baden-Powell, the founder, supposedly had a 20-year relationship with a young British officer. He later married a woman, but talk about Lord's Leap and...
Okay.
I can resist that.
All right.
But anyway, they moved in 150.
Yeah, where did that Lords of Leaping thing come from?
Code at all levels. I think eventually it's going to happen here. Rory Allred's a big proponent of it, the attorney. I met a Scott Mesh in London back in 98. I asked if, like, going co-ed. He said the first Green Ranger troop is a daughter. One of the boys had punched her. She decked him. She stayed and he left.
Yeah, there you go.
It'd be good PR, too, when they get the first girl eagle, I think.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I mean, there is Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. Why not just merge the two of them and just say there's Scouts and there's Boy Scouts, there's Girl Scouts, and, you know, if some of them are gay or some of them are transgendered or whatever they may be, that's fine. We're all part of the human family. I mean, here we are. We're all together. Jim, thank you for the call. Well said. Carol, you want to talk about in Dillon, Montana, you want to talk about the post office?
Oh, yeah. I live in a little town outside of Dillon.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, we may be on the chopping block for post office closing.
Well, Dillon's a pretty small town to begin with. So if you're living in a small town outside of Dillon, you must live in a town with like a couple hundred people in it.
About 800.
So, and your local post office is one of the ones that's looking at the meat axe.
That's what I've heard. Now, whether it is or not, there's been no official word.
Yeah, that sucks.
But we're down to, we get mail Monday through Friday.
Mm.
We have to go to the post office to get it because they don't deliver unless you're quite far out of town.
Yeah.
And the next, if we have to go to Dillon for our mail, that is 42 miles one way.
Wow. Now, here's the good news, Carol. John Boehner said this just a few hours ago. Now, I don't have any idea if he said this because he's all of a sudden, you know, had a conversion experience and decided to be honest, or if this is the beginning of some new weasel strategy. But here's what John Boehner just said a few hours ago.
But I understand where the Postal Commission's coming from. They're in charge with running the post office. But yet the Congress, in its wisdom, has tied their hands every which way in order for them to actually run the post office in a revenue-neutral way. And so Congress needs to act. There's no question about that.
So maybe there's some hope, Carol.
Well, here's another thing. They're cutting the mail themselves. Social Security, you have to go through a bank or a debit card or whatever.
Yeah, that's a whole other rant.
How that's going to work.
Right. This is where I think every state should have their own state banks. And if we're going to process Social Security funds, it should be through the state bank so that the profit can go into the state coffers rather than into Jamie Dimon's next bonus check. But yeah.
I do too.
Yeah. Carol, thank you for the call. Excellent point. We'll see where this whole thing with John Boehner goes. By Friday, I have a feeling it's going to be shaken out. We'll know whether this is another Republican attempt to attack the post office like they did in 2006 by saying that they're fixing the post office, which is what they said in 2006, or whether they're realizing that they overstepped. I'm sure that Bernie Sanders will be all over this on Friday when he drops by. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And in the meantime, contact your member of the House of Representatives, especially if they're a Republican, and tell them to back off this craziness on the post office. Helping you win the Water Cooler Wars, it's the Tom Hartman Program and David in Ankeny, Iowa. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Great. You want to talk about the post office?
Right. I've been listening, but I'm not sure if anybody thought of this, but it's probably the last secure privacy that you have is a letter to write to somebody without the government actually knowing what you're saying to each other.
You're absolutely right. And not only that, if the government wants to open your letter, they actually have to get a warrant.
Search warrant, correct. If they're playing by the rules.
And that's why I've been saying for some time that the post office should be offering email services that have the same levels of security, privacy, and protection, and you know, let them compete with Gmail and Hotmail and everything else. And
well, I kind of like to see all those post office workers walking down the sidewalk or driving their cars. I still will pay $1.50 a stamp to send my letters out.
Yeah, knowing that it's super secure.
To keep people employed.
Yeah, but to extend that logic, David, I think that's such a brilliant point, because for those people who say, you know, we had a caller earlier, I believe it was Ed in Klamath Falls, who said, you know, well, wait a minute, I'm concerned about, you know, the government seeing what's going on with my internet connection if I'm going through the public Wi-Fi. It's a bit of a hybrid mix here, but what if the public Wi-Fi was being administered by the post office and the privacy protections that we have in place for the post office that are actually part of law and have been for 200 years in this country were extended to that? Maybe I'm pie in the sky dreaming, but there is a, you're absolutely right. There is a precedent for that. David, thank you for calling and thanks for sharing that. Richard in Evanston, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, about the post office, but you know, you're right about the military, when you were talking about, the B-1 bomber was, couldn't get through Congress, so they sliced and diced it, and every, state got a piece of it, and that's when they got the B-1 bomber passed.
Right.
That's from the past. Anyhow, about the post office, taking away even one day of service, I think, is really a very kind of dangerous thing because it diminishes the value of that service.
That's right.
Analogy, which maybe doesn't work, is in Chicago, we had CHA housing, and a lot of it was in really good areas, you know, that always very close to the high end of the city for decades. Mm-hmm. So they stopped taking care of it, and you drive by and you go, this is awful. Well, they weren't maintaining it, and now there's no more left. Right. So you take away even one day is really quite a retreat.
Well, and the point that Bernie Sanders was making in the press release that he sent out today, and these are my words, not his, but this is my takeaway from what I read of his press release. And, you know, I went over to his website, sanders.senate.gov or bernie.org, one or the other, and signed up for his newsletter. And, you know, I got this thing today. And the point that he was making is that Saturday service from the post office doesn't cost you anything extra. On the other hand, if you want Saturday delivery from UPS or FedEx, you have to pay extra. So what the post office is doing is they're not only giving away one day out of six of the product that they're offering, they're giving away the one day that is their significant competitive advantage. And that seems, from a business point of view, from a marketing point of view, to be a really stupid thing to do.
Yeah, and one other thing is when the post office was first in service, it was a nonpartisan public service. And Andrew Jackson was the first one to use it. They actually passed laws saying that they couldn't deliver abolitionist material in the South.
Oh, that's
so interesting. We're going back to Andrew Jackson's times. It's become a partisan service, and it's disgraceful.
Yeah. Well, although franking privileges go back to the beginning of the founding of the country, don't they?
Well, and the big debate was whether or not newspapers should be delivered free.
Yeah. Well, and that's why we still have a fourth class rate. You can get a newspaper for, you know, almost nothing because the founders wanted everybody to be able to get a newspaper, and that was one of the main reasons the post office was there. Jefferson felt that without an informed and educated electorate, you couldn't have a functioning democratic republic. And the post office continues to deliver newspapers super, super cheap, although most people don't take advantage of it, or most newspapers don't take advantage of it. But, Richard, thank you for the call. Excellent points. Dr. Stan in Mesa, Arizona, you wanted to get back to gays and the Boy Scouts and that whole thing?
Yes, this is he. I tell you, I have a book here called Brain Sex by Anne Moir and David Jessel.
Mm-hmm.
And on page 23, it talks about the sixth week when, just like a railroad engine going down the track, there's a switch there.
The sixth week of gestation?
Yes. And that switch would put that fetus onto a different track with a tiny dose of testosterone from the mother. I'm talking about not even maybe just enough to wet the end of a pin, not the head of a pin.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll switch that track and give that fetus a male body.
Right.
There are two more. The second one wires the brain male. This will make the frontal lobe grow much larger, the left brain be larger, more analytical, critical. The third dose will set the preference for a female mate. And when I was a kid going to the University of Iowa, we were showing pictures of naked males and naked females to different people, and those who we decided were gay, you could see the pupils dilate.
Mm-hmm.
When a female, a nude female photograph would be shown to a heterosexual female and a homosexual male, that's way deep in the brain. There's no choice there.
That's right.
And so there you have it. So if you've got the one dose, you've got a male body. If you didn't get the two, you've got an effeminate personality and a preference for a male life partner.
Yeah.
If you get the first two, you've got the male body, the male brain, so you're going to be a real he-man, masculine personality, but you're still going to want a guy for your life partner.
Right. In other words, it's all biology.
And there are women who will get the second dose. They have a female body. Here comes the dose. Now they've got a male brain.
Right. So what you've identified is the difference between a straight, quote, normal guy, a Rock Hudson type of gay guy, and a Liberace type of gay guy. And you know, I find it all fascinating, all the biology of it, but I think that it's all part of nature. I mean, you know, these are not things that are like something went wrong. This is, you know, nature does this with all species. Coming up tomorrow on our program, we'll have the latest on what's happening in Congress, to sequester or not to sequester. Gun control, DHS, really buying back assault weapons, plus my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science Rocks, and the best of the rest of the news, and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. You got to get out there and get active. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.